You're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea. This is DJ Shoots, and I just wanted to read out a lost missing dog report. The dog's name is Disco and was lost around noon or 1 p.m. in the Princeville low-income housing area. The owner's name is Mick, and he lives here on the North Shore as well, and his number is 631-3344. The dog's name is Disco. It's a female dog around 2 years old, and the color is brindle, which is kind of like a brown and black and red color with white legs, white tail, and white markings on its face. And again, if you see this dog, and if you've picked it up, then the number to call is 631-3344 to contact the owner directly. That is Mick. And this dog, again, was lost in the Princeville area near the highway, near the low-income HUD housing that they're building next to the Princeville Center. So thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you again next week for our show. Coming up right away is Out of the Box with Jonathan, and you're listening to Kauai Community Radio. Thank you very much.
Awesome. And that's the new construction site by Princeville Mall. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And the dog's name is Disco.
Disco. Black collar, no markings, no ID on the collar.
All right. Well, fantastic. I'll make sure to mention this a little bit later in the
show.
Thank you so much. And thanks so much to you guys for doing such a fantastic show.
Right on.
Bells, bells, and shoes. Coming up right next, we're going to have Out of the Box. You know, it's that weekly call-in show where we talk about what's on your mind, what's on your heart, and what's going on around the world and in the islands. So stick around for that, and we'll have some underwriting messages from folks who make this show possible, just like you. And those fine folks are Kalaheo Chiropractic. Not sure what this one is. Soul Trend. That'll be cool. Ching Yong Village. And thanks so much for your support.
Kalaheo Wellness Center. Now, providing gentle and effective acupuncture, therapy, nutritional wellness, osteopathic training, cold laser therapy, and
let's
spinal decompression.
Let's try that again. Okay.
Open Monday through Friday. Now, a second location. Kalaheo Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, postural training, cold laser therapy, and spinal decompression. Open Monday through Friday, now a second location in Kapa'a, 822-0711, or Southside Center at 332-5580, or online at kalaheochiropractic.com.
Lewis and Eddie Soltran Construction, 639-4836, building quality on Kauai for over 25 years. New custom homes, remodeling, and repairs. Exclusive dealer for Talia's Hurricane Roll-Down Shutters Protection for your home. Lewis and Eddie Soltran Construction, 639-4836, or soltranconstruction.com.
Qingyang Shopping Village proudly supports Kauai's community radio by underwriting this program. Qingyang, the heart of Hanalei. Mahalo, Jeff Culverhouse, for your support.
And thanks to Kalaheo Chiropractic, Soul Train Construction, and Qingyang Village. It's fantastic you guys support Kauai Community Radio. That's the way that we not only survive, but thrive. And if you, the listener right now, want to help KKCR cruise at an even faster velocity, you can go over to kkcr.org, click on the donate button, and you'll feel so good and glad you did. So we have a pretty amazing show today. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world. Mauna Kea developments continue to change, and that's a very evolving situation. Recently, the BLNR is trying to impose new rules to create a restricted zone around the access road. So we'll be talking with some folks from Kahea, the Kauai Environmental Alliance, the legal team there. We'll be speaking also with Kaho'okahi Kanua, one of the Kūkia'i Mauna mountain protectors. And we'll also be talking with Auntie Aggie from Anahola about the new gloriously beautific Anahola Solar Farm Substation. So we got lots of stuff going on today, and very, very happy to open up the phone lines to you at 826-7771. And also, we have somebody coming in new to answer the phones today, so that'll be kind of cool. But there's always lots of volunteer opportunities at our expanding and growing community affairs team. So if you have an itch to help out and help cover events around the island and across the archipelago and around the world, feel free to do that. So got a great show today. I'm going to take a little break with some music and be back in a minute with what's going on in your heart, in your head, and around the world.
Madman, drummers, bombers, and Indians in the summer with a teenage diplomat. In the dumps with the mumps as the adolescent pumps his way into his hat. With a boulder on my shoulder, feeling kind of older, I trip the merry-go-round. With this very unpleasing sneezing and wheezing, the Calliope crashed to the ground.
Expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
That's right. So, a lot of stuff going on in the world. I don't know if you've been paying attention to national politics, but in addition to the amazing list of clowns crawling out of the Republican clown car, Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, Mike Huckabee, Bobby Jindal, Rand Paul, Marco Rubio, Rick Santorum, and of course, the Donald. We have new candidates declaring over on the Democratic side. Bernie Sanders is getting huge crowds as he's in Wisconsin around the country. Hillary Clinton is raising a record amount of money, $45 million the last quarter alone. And Jim Webb has also declared. I'm not sure if he's the former senator of Virginia or the $8 billion space telescope that will be launched 2 years from now, floating a million miles outside the orbit of Earth, looking in the infrared range with five times the area of the Hubble telescope. Northrop Grumman is the huge contractor that's responsible for that, so they're super stoked about it. But, you know, the distant universe, first galaxies, infrared peering through the dusty regions of space, looking for cool objects in the extrastellar clouds. Sounds like an amazing thing. And it also, to me, looks like amazing science that can be done without desecrating the Earth to do it on. So that's a pretty exciting thing. Also, What else is going on? The New Horizons space probe is zooming along at something over 30,000 miles an hour, and it's due to rendezvous with the Pluto system, which is Pluto and its five moons of Charon, Styx, Nix, Kerberos, and Hydra. It's it's so far away that it takes 4.5 hours at the speed of light just to get communications to the craft, which is a long time, especially they were holding their breath a couple days ago because the little space probe accidentally shut itself off for a couple hours. But this thing is just over 1,000 pounds. It's going to fly right through the center of the Pluto orbit system, like a giant bullseye, right through between the inside of the moons there. It's going to be less than 8,000 miles away from Pluto, and that's going to happen on the 14th of this week, next week. So if you're interested in that, take a check out on Pluto at NASA.gov. It's an amazing thing. You know, Pluto was discovered about 75 years or 85 years ago by a 23-year-old fellow named Clyde Tombaugh. And originally they thought it was about the size of Earth, but they discovered over the decades that it was a lot brighter than they thought it was. And so it turns out it was a lot smaller than they thought it was. And they discovered it's only 1/500th the mass of Earth. But it's still an intriguing system. It's got a lot of new science can be happened there. What we're going to find out, what we've been finding out already in the last few weeks as the spaceship is cruising ever faster at, like I said, 31,000 miles an hour, is it's an amazing little world. You check it out. They've got new maps and new details of the cratering systems and cryovolcanoes, and it's truly amazing. And, you know, I love astronomy. I think stuff like this is some of the coolest things that certainly Western civilization has ever done. But as important as I think it is, it's really nice to go out and search, you know, the rest of the universe without destroying the planet that we live on. Here's a statement from a couple months back. I think this is pretty interesting. I think it really sort of makes the point that I just did. And this is from Lanaquila Manguel at the breaking ground ceremony that was disrupted by he and several dozens of other protesters on top of Mauna Kea.
Get away, huh? All right. Oh, I didn't know you guys had eyes on the back of your head. Don't put billions into looking for a brand new planet. Take care of this one.
Aloha. Go someplace else. Aloha. Go to your sacred mountain, wherever your country is. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Aloha.
Aloha.
The dignitaries were eventually brought to the summit area. For a moment, it looked like the groundbreaking would proceed as planned, only a little late.
Hello, good to see you finally. Let me take you to your seat.
The number of guests had decreased. The governor was not at the summit, nor was the mayor.
We are stopping you because he lied to us because there's people up there.
Yeah.
So that's some Mauna Kea information that we'll be getting back to a little bit later in the show. I'm expecting Kahoʻokahi Kanua to be calling in around 4:30. But I just wanted to review some of the rest of the things going on. Let's see. Dr. Judy Carman, who is a Bachelor's of Science, is going to be coming to Kauai at the end of July. She's going to be doing three presentations about GMO, her recent GMO research. She's the head of the Institute of Health and Environmental Research, which is a nonprofit organization, and they're going to be doing informational events in July in Waimea, Princeville, and KCC. If you want to find out more about that, contact info is 651-9603, and I think we'll be hearing more about that in the days and weeks to come. Also is the restricted zone. Recently, BLNR and the DLNR, the Bureau of Land and Natural Resources and the Department of Land and Natural Resources have floated some new rules, some emergency rules that they want to create to give them new powers to govern control over the access road up to the summit of Mauna Kea. What they're basically trying to do is say that the area 1 mile on either side of Mauna Kea Road is going to be a new restricted area, and no person shall at any time bring into the restricted area or possess in control of the restricted area any of the following items: backpacks, tents, blankets, tarps, or any other obvious camping materials. In addition to those restrictions, they don't want anyone to be there from 8 p.m. to 5 in the morning, and they want any group of more than 10 people to have to file for a permit to request access. So it's kind of a strange thing. They're saying that it's in defense of the imminent peril to the natural resources and the safety of the public, but clearly it's an effort to stifle legitimate political speech and to disrupt the Mauna Kea protectors from exercising their constitutional rights to assembly, political free speech, and their customary and traditional cultural practices, which are protected and enshrined in Hawaii state law. So we'll be speaking to Kaho'okahi Kanuha a little later about that. What else do we have? So much paper is going on in the world. I thought it was pretty interesting that over the last 100 days of this political struggle on Mauna Kea for who will be in charge of that and how proper management will be conducted, I think it's an interesting contrast that for the last 100 days in the same period of time, Saudi Arabia has declared Yemen to be a restricted zone. And so what they've been doing with their U.S.-made fighter jets, they and other U.S. client states like Egypt, Morocco, Jordan, Sudan, the United Arab Emirate Republics, Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain, all these countries have been bombing the bejesus out of Yemen. Now, it's been described as a humanitarian disaster and a catastrophe, with 300,000 people being displaced by the fighting and 20 million of the Yemeni people being in urgent need of food and water. The aerial blockade by those U.S. client states has been preventing medical aid from happening there as well. And this isn't just those countries doing that stuff. They're doing it with U.S. armaments and U.S. military support, intelligence, logistical support, and primary weapon systems, as well as an accelerated sale of additional weapon systems to the coalition states. It's kind of crazy. But, you know, that's one way you can deal with conflict, and I'm very glad that's not what we're doing here. Back in April, Saudi Arabia announced the end of Operation Decisive Storm, which was that big bombing campaign, and they called for a shift from military operations to political process and launching peace efforts, which they called Operation Restoring Hope. Airstrikes and shelling continued under Operation Restoring Hope, including aerial bombardment of the many open food markets in the cities and villages in Yemen. And they also destroyed the main runway of the international airport, as well as several buildings in the UNESCO World Heritage Site, Sana'a, the old city. So I'm very, very glad that here in Hawaii'i, if you don't like what the state is trying to do, you can write them a very pleasant email, like I just did. And this is an email to Ku'ule and Moses, She is the Land Board Secretary Office of the Chairman of the Department of Land and Natural Resources. They're having testimony this afternoon in Oahu about the proposed rule changes, and I wrote her to respectfully oppose item C2 of the proposed emergency administrative rules regarding the Mauna Kea Access Road and their desire to implement a restricted zone. And in response, I got a very nice email. Aloha Kakakiaka Jonathan, mahalo for your testimony. It is now part of the record, and I have forwarded it on to the board members. So they will be taking testimony this afternoon about that. And, you know, get involved. Plug in. There's a lot of things going on. If you also want to know, let's see, paperwork. about Mauna Kea and some of the parties who were participants of that, there's also the TMT and their affiliates. And if you go to maunawakea.com, that's MaunaWakea, maunawakea.com, they actually have contact information for not only Governor Ige and Suzanne Case, the DLNR chair, but also UH President David Lasner and the TMT Corporation, the prime funder of the TMT effort, the Gordon Moore Foundation, as well as the international partners of the TMT. They even have the contact information for the general contractor for the project, and that is Goodfellow Brothers. They say that they are way more than a general contractor. We are a family. That's what they say. Well, if you want to support them in their effort to make money with their construction project on top of Mauna Kea, or if you want to suggest to them that perhaps they would be more like a family if they weren't dismantling the PICO of the Hawaiian universe, you can give them a call here on Kauai at 808-241-4601, or you can write them a letter. 4023 Halau Street in Lihue. That's 96766. So there's many ways to get involved. And, you know, one of the things that I really, really, really wish for, pray for, hope for, is that the stuff that we talk about on the air, that you not only can call in and, you know, sound off and blow off some steam and get off your chest, but you can actually give you enough information in these discussions that you can get involved, that you can become radioactive, that because I think it's a terrible thing when we become spectators in the world around us. So, you know, if I can do one thing, it would be inspire you to take some action. So so that's something for you to consider. We have a caller right now. Oh yeah, thank you, Dove. You're so great. Okay. Aloha.
Hi.
Aloha caller, you're on the air.
Okay, thank you. And thank you everybody for getting involved with Mauna Kea. That, I mean, we are all Mauna Kea. I must really, really say that now is time we have to stand up for this mountain. I was up there in 2000, I think it was, and there were three telescopes up there. And then when I saw the footage, the 13 that are existing right now...
There's actually, like, 22 separate installations there. Some of the telescopes are...
Really?
Like, yeah, some of them are, like, multi-location observations.
Oh, great. Well, my whole body, like, cellularly just wept when it saw that. You know, it was... Anyway, I'm actually really calling for another reason. I'm calling to talk about Dr. Judy Carman and Dr. Stephanie Stennis when they come to speak at the end of this month.
Yeah, that sounds really great. If you could quickly give people an update about that.
Sure.
and where they can go for more information, because we've got a caller, Ka Ho'okahi Kanuha, is going to be calling in at 4:30.
Okay. So they're going to be speaking on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, last week of July, so that's the 28th, 29th, and 30th. And the first one will be Waimea, and then the North Shore on Wednesday, and the Thursday will be in Lihue at Kauai Community College. This is an incredible opportunity Dr. Seneff is a researcher at MIT, and Dr. Carmen is a scientist and director of Institute of Health and Environmental Research in Adelaide, Australia. She's also on the ad hoc committee at the United Nations Environmental Program that encompasses biosafety and risk assessment. And so what they're going to be speaking about is Roundup, glyphosate, Roundup, and how GMOs are increasing the use of Roundup and what we can do about it. Anyway, thank you. It's a free event. And thank you, everybody, for caring about Mauna Kea. Aloha. Oh, for information, you can go to the GMO-free Kauai bumper sticker number 6519603. Every bee-friendly, GMO-free world and save our seed has that number on it. Okay, thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you for calling in, caller. Also, I wanted to let people know that Tropical Storm Ella is probably not going to be a huge big deal here. The high surf advisory is issued for July 9th from 8 a.m. in the morning until July 12th, 6 a.m. the next couple days later. And I'll just read. This is from the National Weather Service. It says, high surf advisory for east-facing shores. Swell from Tropical Storm Ella is expected to produce high surf along the east-facing shores of all islands from Friday morning through Saturday night. The surf will diminish rapidly late Saturday night as Ella weakens and passes northeast of the area. High surf advisory in effect from 6 a.m. Friday to 6 a.m. I believe that's a Sunday. So it seems like we're going to dodge another bullet here. Basically, it could be localized heavy rains, muggy weather, but I guess the good news is we're going to have some nice waves coming in on the east and north shore. So let's see. We've also got KIUC information coming up, and I'm excited to talk about that at around 5 o'clock or a little later in the show. I think right now we're going to take a quick musical break and come back with Kaho Okahi Kanuha. You're listening to Out of the Box. I'm your host, Jonathan Jay, this afternoon. And what's your name?
Dan
O'Flaherty. Dan O'Flaherty is a new volunteer here at KKCR, and he's helping out run the phones. If you want to help out with public affairs or volunteer in some capacity here, you're always welcome to call the office number, which is 826-7774. Going to take a little break with some music, and we'll be back with more news about Mauna Kea.
If you need me, call me, no matter where you are. No matter how far, just call my name. I'll be there in a hurry. On that you can depend and never worry. You see, my love is alive. It's like a seed that only needs the thought of you to grow. So if you feel the need for company, please, my God, let it be me. The love I feel for you. But a writer put it very nicely. When he was away from the one he loved, he sat down and wrote these words.
so much for sharing your afternoon with us today here at KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kīʻelauea. We are the station that loves you, and we're always working hard. It's really exciting to be part of a team that helps produce the public affairs and community affairs stuff that we're doing. Right now, I'm very happy to have joining us on the phone Kaʻokahi Kanuha, one of the Kū Kīʻai Mauna Mountain Protectors. Can you hear me, Kaʻokahi?
Hi, aloha.
Thanks so much for joining me today and joining everyone here on Kauai. What's your day been like today?
Today was a nice day. It was a day on the Mauna. Very quiet, very still, very calm, and nice. And just came down the mountain a little while ago. We had a few ceremonies today. Not big, extravagant ones, but just small ones amongst ourselves. We had one around 12 o'clock, Ke Kaukalai, Kalolo, and then did another at the Ahu at about 1:30 or so, and then on our way down, we did one more at Puʻuhuluhulu. Especially as we get ready to head, or as I get ready to head over to the DLNR meeting tomorrow.
Yeah, the testimony for that is a big deal. Maybe you could explain to the listener exactly what they're trying to be doing.
Well, it does seem like an attack against us and the things that we've been doing on the mountain for the past 3.5 months or so. But basically what they're going after is a 1 mile area around the access road where certain things are prohibited, such as carrying a backpack, having a blanket, other obvious camping paraphernalia, as they would term it. So basically, with the timing and everything, it's quite obvious, I think, that they're simply trying to change or create a rule to make our protection efforts of Mauna Wakea more difficult than they already are.
Well, they've already shut down the visitor center. They've turned off all the water. They've closed the bathroom facilities. And now they're trying to introduce new rules and new...
And they took away our bathroom facilities.
Oh, really?
Yes. They threatened to fine the bathroom companies up to $10,000 a day if they were not removed within 48 hours.
And what kind of rationale or justification do they have for that?
That they were not authorized to be on those lands.
Hmm. Well, I have a statement here from Richard Werdemann, who's one of the attorneys for the case. And he says he's writing a letter to Hawaii Attorney General Douglas Chin on behalf of his clients who have been turned away and denied access to exercise their religious, cultural, and traditional practices on Mauna Kea. These rights are protected under state constitution, Hawaii revised statutes, Hawaii case law, and international human rights law. Since the lands in question are ceded lands, many of the clients are beneficiaries to the ceded land trust and have every right to be on the Mauna. What do you think that... How do you think the state can justify these actions?
Oh, I have no idea how they can justify it. I have absolutely no idea. But I think they've also shown that many times they don't really need to justify it. They're just going to do as they do. I can't imagine how they justified allowing the permit and the building of an 18-story telescope that's going to be at least two stories below the ground, 34,000 square feet with a 64,000 square foot construction footprint. On conservation lands, when outside of conservation lands, even in commercially zoned areas, the tallest facility could be a 7-story.
Yeah, so, I was kind of shocked because as I did a little research, I found out that there is no 18-story building on the entire island of Big Island. So this would be the tallest building on the island, taller than any hotel, taller than any office building.
Exactly. And I think the largest building on Hawaii Island at this is 12 stories, and that's in Hilo. And after that building was built, they created the building code or the law that prohibited any building of stories above 7 stories, or any building of buildings above 7 stories.
Yeah, so it's my
understanding. Other than that, you won't find a building taller than 7 stories on the island.
It's my understanding that the reason why that law was created is because people looked at that building and like, wow, that's too high.
It doesn't match. It doesn't fit.
Yeah. So
that's one of the things is that. That's one of the many things that we're against with this project is that they are, this type of irresponsible, unnecessary development is becoming normalized in Hawaii. And if you can do this, an 18-story behemoth of a building on sacred land, also conservationally zoned, then, I mean, what will they start doing in the other areas?
Yeah, well, if you can do that, what else can you do?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because a lot of I sometimes troll through the comments section of the newspaper, and a lot of people are very upset and angry that some people such as yourself are actually standing up and saying, hey, this is sacred land, this is a sacred mountain, this is important to our genealogies, we've lived on these islands for more than 1,000 years. Don't do that. But it's crazy because, you know, mountains have been held to be sacred by thousands of different cultures around the world. You have Mount Sinai, Mount Olympus. Mount Achaia is no different. These high places are classically sacred. So why are people upset about that?
I think they're uneducated. You know, even the most educated person in the world can be very uneducated at the same time. You know, when it's especially if we're talking about certain topics or certain subjects. And I think when it comes to Hawaii, real Hawaii, the real history, not the revisionist history, but the real history of Hawaii, the majority of those people, if not all of them, don't know the real history, don't know the real story of Hawaii, don't know the real culture. And so I think a lot of it is just, you know, uneducated and miseducation, and maybe ignorance. And when it comes down to it, I mean, again, you have to understand, you know, our connection to it. It's not something that we're making up today or that we made up 106 days ago. We're talking about a genealogy, about a history of a people that goes back at least 2,000 years. So people that, you know, sailed across the greatest and largest ocean in the world when the majority of the world thought the world was flat and was afraid to sail more than 6 miles offshore, you know, using only the stars and the winds and the swells and the tides, stars, and so on and so forth. So we come from a great, brilliant people, and there's much need to preserve the history and the story of those people. And Mauna Kea is a very, very big part of that story and of our history. And so, again, if you don't understand it, then maybe you can't see the need. But if you do understand it in the slightest, then I think you definitely not only understand where we're coming from, but be very supportive and definitely be a part of this movement.
What was your background growing up? How did you become exposed to the histories that a lot of people are not aware of? And what was your cultural background?
Well, I was I'm a graduate of Punanaleo Kona preschool, Hawaiian Immersion Preschool in Kona, the first class in 1994. And then I continued on to Kulakaiopuni, Hawaiian Immersion School in Kona, until sixth grade. And then seventh grade, went to Kamehameha Schools, graduated from Kamehameha Kapalama in 2007, and then continued on to Manoa, and got a bachelor's in Hawaiian language. So most of my experience comes from education, especially since from a small kid time where an education and early childhood education is very important. Hawaiian language is, it's not my first language, but I would definitely prefer to speak Hawaiian over English. I'm more comfortable speaking Hawaiian than I am in English.
And why is that? What can you say in Hawaiian that is maybe more difficult or clunky to try and express in English?
Well, I'm not sure if it's more difficult. I just feel more comfortable. It's the language I'm supposed to be speaking. It's the language of this land, and it's the language that I truly identify with and really is the foundation of my identity as a person, as a Hawaiian. It's the language and that perspective that comes with it, which is much different than speaking English. Now, I have both of them because I speak English perfectly fine, but I do feel more powerful, more empowered, more pono when I'm speaking Olelo Hawaii. And so that's where a lot of my teachings come from, is through that lens of, again, just having everything done in Olelo Hawaii.
And what was your day job? What were you doing 107 days ago before all these things, you know, started coalescing?
teaching Hawaiian medium preschool at Punanalea O'Connor.
And Lana Kila is a teacher as well, yeah?
Yes.
So I think it's really quite remarkable that young people, you know, because you're, what, 26?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, young people such as yourself, Lana Kila, others, are actually educators, because it seems to me one of the, you know, fundamental things going on here is that you and others are actually trying to educate the state, educate the DLNR, educate the TMT Corporation about what matters in the world. And to me, it's really extraordinary the patience that you have trying to communicate these very basic ideas to people who are so smart they don't get it or refuse to get it. And I'm wondering maybe if your educational background and your experience teaching kids, how is that helpful in this kind of situation?
It could be very helpful. It is like working with preschoolers, with those people sometimes. But I think that, you know, that's what we're the first products, really, of two different movements, Lana Kila of Hawaiian Charter School Movement and myself, Hawaiian Immersion. And so those two programs have really helped us and really screwed the state up, I think, because children of Hawaii, Hawaiian and non-Hawaiian, are coming along and learning. And they're learning the truth from the very beginning, where they're not learning the truth and having to forget a lifelong lie at the same time. They can grow up with the truth as their foundation. And so for us, when you know the truth and you realize that the majority of the people around you don't know it, then you feel a sense of obligation to have to, at the very least, enhance their awareness to this truth, if not get them to understand what the truth is. And that's something that we're embracing. You know, we're not here just to stand off against CMT because it's fun. We have a reason. We have many reasons for it. And we are more than willing to share those reasons with anybody at any time, because we understand that there is quite a few people in Hawaii and around the world that don't understand these reasons or don't even know that these reasons exist. And so we want to let the whole world know, social media, all of the people in Hawaii, let them know why we're here. We've tried to, I mean, again, we have many different reasons, and we've tried to illustrate that and produce those thoughts in over and over again. So I think people find multiple ways to kind of get the first foot in the door when it comes to this issue, and you know, it is education. That's what it all comes down to, is educating and not miseducating, but education with truth and not in a revisionist style.
Well, some of the recent history that I think a lot of people are not very aware of, in terms of the resurgence of the Hawaiian cultural identity, is the events like that took place over on Kaho'olawe when the Navy was bombing that. And, you know, people like George Helm and Eddie and Uncle from Molokai.
Uncle Walter,
thank you. You know, those guys, when they were younger, like your age, yeah, you know, they stepped up and they actually were able to stop the Navy, the United States Navy, from bombing this island to smithereens. You know, I don't think that island was attacking anybody, so I don't understand how bombing the island was going to make the Navy better at anything, because islands don't usually attack people. But, you know, that was a battle that was fought and was won. You know, a couple of years ago, the Keck telescopes tried to expand their facilities with what they were calling outriggers, additional, mirrors and lenses to expand the capacity to see. And, you know, the judge threw that out because they just did not have a reasonable management plan. So I think those are two examples of some of the recent history where Hawaiian cultural values have been successfully reasserted. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if you guys are triumphant here with the TMT.
I wouldn't be either. I mean, and again, we wouldn't have, I don't think anybody in their right mind would commit this much and put this much energy into something, they didn't truly believe that they could win. But, you know, but one of the things that got me started, at least with this, one of the things is looking into Ko'olawe. And you know, I mean, always knew, you know, George Helm, Kimo Mitchell, you had Walter, you had, you know, even like some of the people that sang with us, like Uncle Earl, Gideon, they were all there. But you don't always realize how old they were when they started doing that. And I think George Helm was 26 years when they did what they did to him. And so that's how old I am. So when I look at that, I realize, well, maybe, you know, we're not as young as we think. You know, it is time to do what we feel needs to be done. It's not time to wait around for someone else to do it. It's time to do it ourselves, start something. People will come together like we have. And it's an age doesn't matter. We just need to, you know, we use what we know. And again, many of us know the truth, and the truth is so powerful that it'll force you to stand up for the things that you know is true, for the things you believe in. And they won on, if we take down the United States military, there's no reason why we can't take down CMT. I truly believe we will. Now we're not gonna downplay that. We also realize we're up against a $1.4 billion project and 5 different countries. But we've done it before, and our kupuna have done it before, and we are the product of those kupuna, so we'll do it again.
One of the things that has been really interesting and eye-opening to me, and a real education, is this notion of kapu aloha, or sacred love. Could you explain to the listener what that means and why it's so critical?
Well, kapu aloha is basically a standard. It's a standard to live by, a very, very high standard. And it originally started with the thought that we would live by this standard on the mountain, but this is also kind of, it's gone with us everywhere we go. But basically, it's a combination of love and truth. And I think a lot of times, we as Hawaiians have been stepped on, pushed to the side, because of aloha. Had too much aloha, we didn't have enough truth in there. And that's what kapu aloha is about. It's about producing that truth, educating on that truth, standing firm on that truth, while also not attacking the other side. Educate them, explain to them. You know, we can have a confrontation, but it doesn't have to be yelling. It doesn't have to be hostile. It doesn't have to lead to violence. We can, one of our mottos is, you know, the words of James Kolia in 1897 as they're gathering the petitions for the Kū'e.
The Kū'e, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, he said, let us take up the honorable struggle and fight brain against brain. And so that's the way that we look at it. We can fight this with words, but we all know when someone starts yelling at you, whether they're right or they're wrong, you have a hard time listening to that.
Yeah, it's very challenging to try listen.
Yeah. Even if you absolutely agree with what the person is saying, it can be hard to listen to. So understand that. Understand that there's going to be tough situations. It's the only way we're going to get through to them is if we can compose ourselves, if we can take the harder route. Because the easy route would be to react, yell, do whatever. The tougher route would be to compose yourself, collect your thoughts, and articulate your thoughts in a way that's still respectful, regardless of the fact that they're on the side of opposition.
Well, one of the things that's so impressive to me about kapu aloha is the respect that you extend to the people who oppose you. And, you know, most often when it's funny because conflict situations are actually kinds of agreements, because if a person comes at you with violence, you agree to be violent back with them. But when you stand in kapu aloha against the TMT, they have to respond in kind.
Yep. And that's the challenge we're putting out to them, is that we have made a commitment from day one to conduct ourselves and always in kapu aloha. And we ask the same of you. Because on June 24th, when they last attempted to go up the mountain to desecrate it, they actually, the DLNR themselves and their officers actually resorted to a use of physical force and tried to physically push their way through the line, just happened to be my line. and they actually tried to push their way through me, and one officer grabbed me with two hands and yanked me to the side. Simply for standing and chanting, they pushed the person next to me over. So, in many situations, that would have escalated into who knows what. But again, because of Kapua Law, we're able to compose ourselves quickly, we're able to gather ourselves and have an honest, you know, verbal exchange and dialogue, and explain the situation with each other, negotiate in the sense of how we can move forward that day, and so on and so forth. But it didn't get out of hand, and that's a testament to the Kapua Law that really everybody on the mountain is abiding by. And again, we hope that the opposition, whether that's KMT, DLNR, county police, or even the National Guard, who they may be bringing soon, that they conduct themselves in Kapua Law just as we do.
I also noticed a couple of weeks ago, in response to the first round of arrests, the first 31 people who got arrested back several months ago, that that an offer was made that instead of these, instead of being pushing it through the legal system and the courts, that instead there was an offer of ho'oponopono was made. Can you explain what is ho'oponopono, and is that offer still on the table? And how did you react when the TMT apparently ignored that and tried to re-begin construction?
Okay, well, first of all, a motion for ho'oponopono was filed by three of the 31 arrested on April 2nd. And they filed a motion to find an alternative to going into trial and to enter into ho'oponopono. And that motion was accepted and supported by the prosecutor's office as well as the judge. And so what they did was, in each defendant's arraignment or attendance at court, the judge offered each one the chance to postpone trial until December or later and to enter into ho'oponopono. So that was accepted by, I believe, all but one of the 31 arrested, whose charges were not dropped. And so we came out with a press release and a public invitation that day, and we sent it out, and it was blasted all over the place, inviting TMT, the governor's office, DLNR, and the University of Hawaii to ho'oponopono with members of the 31. Our only stipulation...
Can you just explain what is ho'oponopono? Because a lot of people probably do not know. They're not familiar with that term.
So ho'oponopono is a Hawaiian... how would you say it in English? It's a fixing of a problem or a situation. Making right. Making what is wrong right. That's basically what ho'oponopono means. It's to fix, to make right. And so... Ho'oponopono is a traditional and cultural Hawaiian way of making right what is wrong. And so, again, there's wrong being done on the mountain. But the only way that we could keep the integrity of ho'oponopono, because the only intent is to fix what's wrong and make it right. And so if we're going to legitimately say that that's the objective, then in order to enter into ho'oponopono, need to agree that there'll be no attempt at construction during that time.
Yeah, that's sort of not in the spirit of accord.
Of course, you wouldn't be able to legitimize your being in a ho'oponopono with the intent to fix things when you're continuing to commit that wrong. And so that was ignored. They came out 2 days later with a statement that they'd be resuming construction on a Wednesday. So essentially, they answered our they responded to our invitation without, you know, directly respond to it.
Yeah, by ignoring it and instead taking actions that were inconsistent with it. It was very interesting. I contacted the Governor Ige's office following that, and I asked, so what about this ho'oponopono that you were invited to? And I was told by his press secretary that they had no idea about that, that they hadn't seen anything about it, and they had no comment and no awareness of it, which I thought was very... non-credible, because it had been all over the web and you guys had expressly invited the governor.
And from what I understand, that before that motion was that option was presented to us in court, the prosecutor's office went over that with all of those entities, and they all agreed to it, which is why it was supported by the judge and the prosecutor's office. So they knew about it even before the public invitation, from what I understand.
Well, what do you have you had any communication with the Gordon Moore Foundation? Gordon Moore is a very wealthy billionaire. He made his money in Intel, and he's the creator of Moore's Law, which explains the way that computer processing chip speeds double every 2 years. And he made that prediction back in the 60s, and he's grown into a very wealthy billionaire. Today he has a foundation that I think they have an endowment of $25 or $26 billion, and he likes to apply it towards environmental conservation, cutting edge science, medicine, stuff like that. But have you had any communication with them, and have you pointed out the contradiction between conservation and the creation of the TMT?
No, we have not had any communication with him. The closest thing we had to communication with him was when supporters of Mauna Kea were holding a concert at the Kahilu Theater, and Gordon Moore, being a funder of Kahilu Theater, threatened to pull all of his funding of that theater if they did not agree, if the theater held the concert there that was supporting Mauna Kea. And so that concert had to be moved, I believe, a week before the date of the event. And that's the closest thing that we've had to communication with them or with him. So I know he has a house on Hawaii Island. They probably only live here 1 or 2 months out of the year. So we haven't had any communication with them. I'm not sure if we will in the future.
What? Okay, so many times you and many others have said you're not against astronomy, you're not against science. You just don't want to see any, not even don't want, but refuse to allow any further desecration on the summit of Mauna Kea. What do you think that the TMT Corporation, what do you think that they, what is their blind spot? Why do they refuse to acknowledge the things that you're saying? What do you understand so clearly that they don't get?
Well, one, conservation land. So the 8 criteria and all of that's laid out for them. They can go ahead and try and justify that. I see no way how they can. They don't understand our history. I don't think they want to understand our history. It's not very hard to understand. You know, I mean, they're scientists. They could look at the Kumulipo and understand, and should be able to understand what all of that means.
And the Kumulipo is the creation chant.
Yes, a 2,130-line creation chant that was that's been done for generations and generations and generations. It was written for the birth of Kuninui Iamamau, who is the son of Kawai'i Te Kahiali Okomoku from Hawaii Island. So they don't understand those things. They don't understand that we have a science. That science, that we're not here trying to figure out how can science and culture coexist, because we come from a culture that is science. I mean, we are here in Hawaii because of science. Like I mentioned earlier, sand is the greatest ocean in the world by the stars, the winds, the currents, the tides, the swells, the sun, the moon. I mean, the lo'i that were up and down the valleys, and Kahana, and Waipio, and Nawai'eha, and all over, all of Hawaii Mokupuni. The different fish ponds that we had all over the place, the dry land system, the hale that we built. I mean, everything was science, really, when you look at our culture. But the science didn't desecrate, and that's what they can't understand, is that we cannot, you know, like Gandhi said, one of the 7 great sins is science without humanity. And I cannot find the humanity in this science. It is dehumanizing us as a people. It is saying that our history is not real, that our genealogy is not real. And if it is, they simply don't care.
One of the things that I think is so interesting about the Kumulipo is the parts of it that explain the way the universe came into being, the way life evolved, in ways that were understood by the Hawaiian people more than 1,000 years ago, that Western science is only just now catching up with. For example, astronomy in the last 10-15 years has been able to confirm that the red blood cells in our body, that the iron molecules that were there were only created within supernova by stars. And so, and that was, you know, billions of years ago. So each of us alive today is literally made up of the of star stuff, of the debris of earlier generations of stars that came before our solar system and made us all possible. And that's described as one of the greatest gifts that astronomy has given to the 20th century. And yet, this very same information is in the Kumulipu, and the Hawaiian people have known this for more than 1,000 years.
Oh, yeah. And another example of that is just the water in Ko'ohe. They did some studies down in Pakuloa area a few months ago, and they didn't think they're going to find water any higher than 600 feet above sea level, and they found water 4,600 feet above sea level. But it, so that's a new revelation for them, something that they just found out. But Akupuna could have told you that hundreds of years ago, when they named that Ahupua'a Ka'ohe, which means the bamboo, which is a kinolau of Kane, who is the god of fresh water, and the bamboo holds fresh water in every node, so it's a container of water. So they named the place Ka'ohe because they knew the place to be a container of water. It's, I mean, many Hawaiians could have told them that, but again, like you said, they're trying to catch up.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Kaho'okahi Kanua. He's one of the Kūkia'i Mauna, the mountain protectors at Mauna Kea, Mauna Awa Kea. You're listening to KKCR, Anale, K-A-Q-A, Kilauea, and I'm your host this afternoon, Jonathan Jay, with Out of the Box. Hey, can you stick around with us just for a few minutes? We're going to do some underwriting and then like come back.
Okay, thank you.
All right, fantastic.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Haleiwa.
And also I want to thank the underwriters that make this show possible in partnership with people just like you. We have Hawaii Life and Tahiti Nui.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama aina.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Kevin Bako, MD of Hawaii Compassionate Care, offers medical marijuana certification exams at his office in Kapa'a. Information and appointments available at 808-854-6335 or online at hawaiicompassionatecare.com.
And mahalo nui loa to Hawaii Life, the Tahiti Nui, and Compassionate Care. You're listening to Out of the Box with your host today, Jonathan Jay. I'm on the phone right now with Kaho'okahi Kanua. He's one of the Kūkia'i Mauna, the protectors of Mauna Wakea, Mauna Awakea. And thanks so much for sharing your afternoon with us.
Mahalo. Mahalo nui for having me.
So what comes next?
Well, I think that's a question that David Ige needs to answer, because we're simply there to protect. So we're mostly defensive in the sense that we wait for them to, you know, we're there. We're offensive in our protecting it and not letting them sneak around us. But as far as what we do, we simply, you know, we have ideas and we react appropriately and accordingly based on what they plan to do. So we really don't know, but I do know that it probably looks something like the other Wednesday, June 24th.
Yeah, it's quite a curious thing with the TMT just pressing forward over and over again. I really don't understand it, because I think that astronomy is a wonderful thing. I think that inquiry into the natural world around us is a great learning opportunity for everyone. But it's so curious when you look through the other end of the telescope at how they are conducting themselves without compassion, without respect, without regard for the living environment or the living relations between people. You know, Western science seems to look at things in isolation. It seems to separate one thing from another and look at it as a discrete, unconnected thing. But the Hawaiian worldview, to my understanding, places a greater importance on relationships, the context, and the way things relate to each other. Can you expand a little bit on that?
Relationships, you mean?
Yeah, and the value of a thing in its context as opposed to, you know, isolated. Because they say, oh, looking at the stars is great. We can find information out about other planets and other worlds. We might even be able to find another planet with life on it. But they ignore the fact that they are destroying life here to try to do that.
Yeah. Well, they can't understand and assume the responsibilities of their relationship to this place, but they want to go ahead and look for another place. I think that's one thing that they get. They understand the human relationship from one human to another, but they cannot fully understand and grasp our relationship to this place. They don't get it. I don't know why. Maybe it's because they're not from here. Again, maybe it's just because they just don't care. But they simply don't seem able to comprehend the type of relationship that we have with this place. They do not understand and cannot understand Aloha Aina Oya I'o, and they definitely do not understand how powerful it is. Aloha Aina and our love, our true patriotic love for this land, is stronger and far superior to any amount of money and to any telescope and to any amount of countries or any private entities. They just cannot understand that. And that's something that, you know, we understand, and we're even, you know, respectful of their practices. And that's fine. We have nothing against it. We don't want that wiped away. All we're saying is do not do it that way on Mauna Loa Kea.
Yeah, it's curious to me what they don't understand. But, you know, in the Hawaiian worldview, the Hawaiian universe, it's not a great big dead mountain of rock. It's actually a living ancestor. It's part of your genealogy. And you know, people can debate, like, well, that's not technically feasible, that's not actually possible. But the consequence of that belief is that you have a sacred and compassionate relationship to the living world that we all have, that we all depend on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All of these things come before us. The vacuum bug comes before us. The rat comes before us. The dolphin comes before us. The coral comes before us. The worm comes before us. Trees, the plants, they all come before us. They're all our ancestors. And that's not just the case in the Hawaiian way of thinking. That's the case through a lot of native cultures and peoples around the world. And now our culture tells it a little differently than those cultures do, but the basic foundational understanding of it is the same thing. And we are, again, we do share the same genealogy. We share the same home. And so we're the youngest siblings, and the Aina, which includes the ocean and everything connected to it, the Mauna, that is our kupuna. And we have a responsibility to treat it and respect it and protect it as our kupuna. And that's all we're doing, is that we are assuming our responsibility. We're not doing this because it's something that we were looking for. We were chosen. We were put in this place in this time for this reason, and that is to protect what is ours, assume our responsibilities, protect our history, our culture, and really our future.
Yeah, because what happens if you don't do those things?
Exactly. And again, we're doing this looking back to the example set by our ancestors. And one day, I will all be ancestors one day. You know, we'll have people looking up to us, and they're going to look back to our time, and they're going to face similar situations, and they're going to look back to our example. And so we need to set an example for future generations. And when they look back, and when they face a struggle, and they need the example of their parents or their grandparents or their great-grandparents, they'll look back and see that we did what was right. We did everything we could to protect our Aina.
Well, Kahoʻokahi Kanua, I want to thank you so much for spending some time with us. I know that you probably have a lot of logistics and strategy to try and figure out. I'm sure that you're going to be giving testimony tomorrow for the BLNR. Can you give us a sense of the kind of testimony you want to give? I want to give you a chance to say what is the most important thing and to kind of wrap things up.
Well, I haven't thought about it at all yet. But basically, it seems like a direct attack and a direct response to our actions on the mountain for the last 3.5 months. They can't find any way to criminalize us in a sense. They can't find any wrongs legally with what we're doing, and therefore they need to go ahead and create a rule so that they can then deem the situation in violation of it. And so I think it's a tactic, it's a strategy to make our protection efforts more difficult to get us off of the mountain. But I mean, like I told them from the very beginning, there's nothing that they can do that will accomplish that. It's a weak and a shameful attempt to get us off of the mountain, and they're neglecting the fact that this does not, although they're clearly targeting the protectors, it affects so much more people than the protectors. The protectors are the great minority in the picture of people, you know, affected. And one of those groups of people are photographers. And there's a few groups that have come together in opposition to this rule, not really a change, but a creation of it. So they just got to be, like in a lot of the things they do, they got to be a little bit more smart, maybe put a little bit more thought into this. And if they really think that this is going to deter us from doing what we need to do, then they are way more off than I thought.
Well, it's a curious thing because essentially, it's not necessarily politics per se, but this is a political discussion. This is a social discussion. This is a debate. And it just seems pathetic to me if you can't come up with a good response for what the other side is saying. You just criminalize them and then remove them from the area. It's antithetical not only to everything I know about Hawaiian culture, but it's totally unconstitutional even for U.S. law. So it's really quite baffling to me.
Like they say, you know, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, and then you win. And so they spent a lot of time laughing. Now they're realizing that we're for real, and they better step their game up, and they really don't seem to have the ability to do so. The only thing they got on us that they can bring is the National Guard. And do we expect that? Of course. We expect that at one point or another. The governor said he would not use it, but I think he also mentioned that he's not considering that at this time.
Well, he also said that he is committed to keeping the road open, and yet it's been closed ever since he said that.
That's a contradictory action from the very beginning. The whole reason they were there on that Wednesday was to ensure that there was access through that road, and since that day there has been no access, and since that day there has been no protectors on that road. So again, silly, weak and shameful tactics.
So if folks want to get involved, help out, how can they contact you? How would you direct people to get involved?
Well, the best way is to start talking about it. Start participating in the sign wavings that are going on, and the bunch of different rallies and events that are being held across the Paiaina. And ultimately, if you can make the time, you know, be ready for the kahea to go out when PMTU decides to try and go up the mountain again. You know, for the other week, we didn't put out a public kahea. PMTU came out with a statement, and we figured that we would just surprise them with what we have and surprise ourselves as well. And we had a great turnout.
Yeah, it was almost 1,000 people.
Close to it, and without putting out again a public call saying that it was time to make the stand. So for the Lahui, for everybody listening in support, be ready for it. The kahea will come, and ultimately that's the greatest way. You don't have to stand up there until you get arrested like others. Just being there, being a part of it, being one of the thousands hopefully that we have on the mountain when it's time to stand again, that's the greatest way to support.
Well, I don't know how soon this is going to get resolved, meaning I don't know how soon it will be until the TMT just decides this is too big of a headache for them and they, move their plans over to the Canary Islands and try build a telescope there, because I think that's about the only other place in the Northern Hemisphere that they can get the kind of observations that they're looking for. But I don't know if that will be in a year or 10 years or however long that will be. But even though nothing is happening on the mountain right now, construction and fabrication of all the components and stuff is taking place in Canada, in Japan, in India, and in China. And it's, you said that they have time and money. Well, I don't know how much time they have, but Gordon Moore's got a lot of money. But, even 1.4 billion reasons to do something cannot triumph over infinite love. So I want to thank you for everything that you're doing, and please share my aloha with everyone else who's working so hard and doing what you believe in to try and save this Earth here so that future astronomers have a planet that they can take observations from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mahalo, Nui. Mahalo. Appreciate it.
All right. Aloha. Thanks for joining us. We're going to take a little musical break, and we'll come back again in a few minutes with, I think we're going to be talking about KIUC and what they've got in store.
Welcome to the Unforgettable Fire.
Silver.
want to thank you for joining us this afternoon here on KKCR, the station that loves you. It's a little Unforgettable Fire from you too. And I want to thank Kaho Okahi Kanuha, who's calling in from, I think, Big Island, just giving us an update and some of his perspective on what are some of the real issues going on with the Mauna and astronomy and, you know, large corporate forces. They seem like they're so accustomed this day to just doing whatever they want. You know, capitalism, it's not something that we talk about too much in this society, because it's kind of like the water that we swim in. But, you know, capitalism is not a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's just a thing that is concerned not with people, not with life, not with planets or living systems, but with capital. That's why it's called capitalism. And it's not a democratic thing. And it's a $1 equals one vote thing. Capitalism is a philosophy that says that money should do what it wants to. And if everybody had the same amount of money, that would be like an equitable situation. But, you know, big corporations, big power, they do not have compassion for the little people like you and me, the little tiny things, the algae, the Waikua bug, the living systems that we're all a part of. They seem to fail to recognize the reality that we are dependent upon. People talk sometimes about, oh, the economy, and balancing it with ecology or the environment. But hey, you know what? No environment, no economy. So on the phone with us right now, we've got Auntie Aggie calling in from Anahola. Are you there, Auntie? Aloha, Auntie. Can you hear me?
Well, this is Rick Catania. You were going to have Auntie Aggie talk to you first?
Yeah, I think so. I'll
call in a few more minutes.
Oh. Okay, well, yeah, call back in a few minutes, and I'll introduce this next topic.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, you go have her call, and then I'll call again.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Aloha, caller. So I wanted to talk about KIUC because I got in the mail a couple of weeks ago this very nice letter, and it was from the board of directors from Kauai Island Utility Cooperative allocating my annual patronage capital allocation and capital retirement for 2014. KIUC, because it's not a for-profit corporation, instead, their operating expenses over and above, or the revenue that they make above their operating expenses, is set aside as cooperative equity. That's the percentage of the co-op that you and I and everybody who has an electric bill owns. And they've, since 2002, they've built up $93 million in equity and returned about $25 million in patronage capital to the members. But, you know, it's not always an easy thing with KIUC. Sometimes, like everybody, KIUC is not perfect. They make some mistakes. They have some challenges. But I want to invite everybody, because I got this letter from a very nice letter from Jan Ten Rugenkate, who is the chairman of the KIUC Board of Directors, inviting myself and everyone to the annual membership meeting at 6 p.m. on Thursday, July 23rd, which is coming up. That's going to be at the Kauai Community College Performing Arts Center. The doors are going to open at 5. And Paul Togioka, his award-winning slack key guitar, is going to be providing music before the program. So they are going to be talking about what's happening at the cooperative and give a report on their progress towards, you know, creating more renewable energy here on Kauai. And you are invited to go and ask questions. And you can actually even send your questions in advance to info@kiuc.coop. And you know what? They want to hear from you. They're going to be providing chili and rice. I guess they're going to be giving out a bag of rice and some LED light bulbs to the first 350 people who attend the meeting on the 23rd. Not sure about LED bulbs. I think they have a mercury in them, don't they? Yeah. And you should get your mic up here. I get the second voice here. This is Dan O'Flaherty, and he's, you're 29?
29.
From Kalaheo, and he's a brand new volunteer here at KKCR answering the phone. So, mercury in those LED bulbs, huh?
Indeed.
So, I'm not sure. It's like a toxic material. You can't just dispose of them. They have to have special disposal. It's a hazardous material. So, I'm not sure why KIEC is handing out hazardous material at their meeting. But perhaps, you know, someone from KIEC can call in and explain that. Do we have another caller on the line?
Auntie Aggie.
Auntie Aggie. Aloha, Auntie Aggie. Can you hear me, Auntie? Oh, there we go. Sorry, Kalamai. That was my bad. Wrong button I push. So this is Auntie Aggie is calling in from
Anahola,
up in the Ko'olaumoku, the Windward District of Kauai.
That's correct.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling in. Really appreciate that. You wrote an email a few weeks ago about the ugly and despicable Anahola solar array. Maybe you could explain what that was about.
Yes. Let's start from the beginning.
That's a good place, yeah?
Yeah. We, as residents, were driving by, you know, the new solar park that they have set up there, which we are all for, and we know that this energy is going to help the Department of Hawaiian Homeland Beneficiaries get homes and funding for infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. So we're kind of very cool about green energy. And
I think they're putting in like $250,000 a year or something for the lease arrangement.
Yes, exactly. And with DHHL, who leased them the land, we should be able to get more people on the land with the money that's generated.
Yeah, so that's kind of a good thing. And it's also a good thing that all of the electricity being generated there is oil that we don't have to import, that we don't have to burn, and it's money that we can keep inside our local economy as opposed to, you know, because there's no oil here. So if you want to buy oil, that's hard cash you got to pay. And that's a big drain on our local economy. It's almost $100 million a year.
Yes.
I commend KIUC for taking some strategic steps to address that grievous situation. And I looked at Pleasure and Pride as the solar panels marched across the landscape there. I thought, wow, that's awesome. Here we are investing in renewable energy. But then, wow, you know, this thing they just built by the side of the road, it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's not amazing in a good sense. It's amazing in the horrible impact it has put upon each person that drives by it. Instead of seeing the beautiful aina, smelling the beautiful trees, plumerias, we now have to drive home and greet this ugly, despicable, ghetto-looking substation. And abrasive.
There is no free lunch. If you're going to create electricity like that, you have to, you know, you have to transduce it, or I'm not sure what the technical term is. I'm sure there's some engineers at KIEC who could explain it better. But you have to take that electricity, which is going to be DC, and you have to convert it into AC and plug it into the grid somehow. But was that always the idea from the get-go, that they're going to have that big industrial facility right on the side of the road?
No. Actually, I believe the plans were to have it set back on the property. And they did have several meetings concerning this. There were a couple of people, actually a couple of men, who stood up and said that if you move this, which KIUC had intentions of moving because of the cost factor, to connect these transformers, inverters, et cetera, to the main power line, they would have to move it closer to the highway, and there was objection to that at some of the community meetings.
So what happened?
Well, nothing. Nothing happened. They told them one suggestion was to put it across the road, and that was shot down because that property across the road is being left open for future use by DHHL. The other person who suggested putting it back said he was told that they couldn't put it back because of the birds. And when he questioned them about what birds, you know, they weren't specific about it. They just said the birds.
I would think that would be the Newell Shearwaters.
It could be, and it also could be the Hawaiian Nene.
Oh, yeah, because that's a nesting ground. Yeah, that's possible.
Yeah. And so whatever the reason was, his voice was not heard. And he was the only person that knew how to read the drafting schematics on paper. And he knew that something like this was going to be an eyesore. But the rest of the lay people who were at the meetings did not understand, you know, an architectural rendition of...
Well, I'm sure that they did not present an architectural rendition of the finished facility such that you could see that all those transformers and those poles. And I mean, it looks like kind of like Dr. Frankenstein's laboratory, but except, you know, 50 times bigger.
Yes, thank you. Anyway, so nobody really knew what it was really going to look like. And when it was being built, you know, it didn't really make an impression on anyone until it was almost finished.
Well, that was the very last thing they did.
Exactly. And by that time, you know, it was like people were in a panic, like, what is that? Who's doing something about this? How did this happen? You know, so many people were in an uproar about it. So henceforth, I wrote that letter to KIUC, to the board members, and to several leaders in the community, and to the newspaper as well.
Well, one thing I know about KIUC is when you bring issues like this to their attention, they respond. Not always how you maybe want them to, but they definitely are very attentive and very concerned to stay up to speed with what public opinion is and how people feel about what they're doing on the island. I know Jim Kelly is the public relations guy over at KIC. He's a very capable, very competent individual. How did he respond to your concerns about the huge eyesore, the impact that was devastating, the industrial ghetto, the despicable, ugly facility? Because, you know, what did he say about that?
Well, what he said was that they had community meetings. No one apparently made any objection or, you know, big objection to what they had planned, which was to change it from the back to the front. And so without that, with that minor community input, which I believe only one association was involved with, and there were a few members of that association that did attend regularly, it was overlooked, and they just kind of pushed it through, and they told us and they told other people that it was a cost factor issue and that they had not gotten a grant, which they had applied for, and they were applying for a grant, but they didn't get the funding because it wasn't going to fall in the time frame of them finishing the project. So they were not given that extra money, you know, to keep it in the back.
So is that because they failed to appropriately manage the project to be done in a timely fashion, or what does that mean?
Well, what do you think that means? That's exactly what it means. And so they only had so much money to work with, and they had to put it closer to the highway.
But they only had so much money, from what you just explained, because they screwed up.
Yeah, you could say that.
Well, I don't want to I'm just trying to understand the situation. So Jim Kelly is a very intelligent and capable person. Did he come out and take a look at it? Did he say, gosh, you're right, it sure is ugly?
He was very helpful. He came right out that day. I'm surprised that KIUC had not been coming out regularly and checking this place out. And he saw it. He was probably just as shocked as we all were. And he offered to help us. He invited us to their membership meeting that week and to speak our minds on the issue. And he has been helpful in getting resources to cover, hide, beautify the mess that they made. I think it would cost us taxpayers much money to have it removed and then moved back, you know, than it would to just beautify the front part of it.
So you mean hide?
Hide it, yes.
So he didn't...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so when he came out and looked at it with you, he didn't try and argue with you and say, well, I don't think it looks that bad.
No.
Well, that's...
No.
Yeah, you know, because Jim Kelly, he's a smart guy. I would expect him to make a good call right there. So what are the solutions?
Well, the only solution now is to landscape it and try to minimize the eyesore and the impact that it has on everyone passing by, including all our tourists that come to Anahola. And, you know, I've always strived to... uplift this community and beautify it and make people proud of being here, you know. And the solar park is something we can be proud of, but that structure, substation in the front, I'm not proud of that at all. You know, in olden days, if the Ali'i were reigning, if the Konohiki were reigning, this would not have happened, because you know why? It was a grave crime to desecrate the land, the aina, the resources, and they would bash your head in with a pohaku if you did that. And people knew the consequences of doing something like this, stealing water, you know, making our aina look ugly, taking the food away from us, giving us junk Hawaiian homelands to make, you know, farmland out of.
Yeah, with no water.
Yes, exactly. So, our ancestors knew how to take care of situations like this. Now, you know, we attempt to do something like this, we're all going to end up in jail.
Well, I think, you know, the main idea is to stop bad things from happening in the first place. You know, if there's consequences, then everybody's going to say, okay, well, let's avoid that. What do you think are some of the lessons moving forward? What are the lessons learned or that could be learned that I hope that are learned from this, you know, from what happened here where a not a good solution happened?
I think two things. Preventive oversight of projects, any kind of projects that take place in your neighborhood, not necessarily Anahola, but any neighborhood. If you know something's going on, get involved. You know, it's your kuleana, it's your responsibility. And I'm not putting blame on anyone. We're all to blame as far as I'm concerned. We're all to blame because we didn't get out there and we didn't express ourselves. We didn't go check on things. We didn't provide oversight that's necessary. And this is the result.
Do you think there's some lessons here for KIUC to learn for their next project? Because I'm sure... they're going to have, you know, more projects, and I hope that that KIC does have projects that are going to benefit the island and help reduce our dependence on importing oil and actually even help reduce our unnecessary consumption of electricity so we don't have to make it in the first place. But what kind of recommendations do you have for KIC about how they can do this better going forward next time?
Well, I think they did a lot of good, you know, they tried to, but what I would suggest is that they don't just take one aspect of the community as the word of every person that lives in that community. So, for instance, don't just approach one group, you know. Approach everybody and make a point to find out who the other factions are in the community. Not everybody belongs to certain organizations here.
Do you think that KIEC did not was not broad enough in their outreach? Do you think that the community discussions they had were only with too narrow a section of the community?
I think they didn't know. I think they were ignorant to the fact, to that fact, and that they just assumed that the groups that they were speaking to spoke for the greater majority of the community. So, you know, that's why I'm saying it's not just their Kuleana, it's all of our Kuleana, you know? Myself included, you know, I should have been at those meetings, but I had not been involved with the community for 20-something years because of issues within the community and different organizations. So instead, I wrote the Anahola book to give back to the community. But I realize now that that's not all you should do.
So I guess
get up and touch the people and touch their hearts. And I think if KIUC had touched more people's hearts in Anahola, this could have been avoided.
So it sounds like the lesson is really twofold. One is KIUC, and not just KIUC, but, you know, all organizations who want to conduct themselves on the island within communities, they should do a much more profound and deeper outreach to get more people involved so that they won't have problems after the fact. And maybe they could have done a better job describing what was actually going to occur, so it wouldn't be such a big shock. And then on the other hand, you're saying that, hey, folks, we got to get involved in our community. We can't just sit back and then grumble when things happen because we weren't involved in the first place.
Exactly, exactly. And so now we move on, you know. We like you expressed in with your last speaker about Ho'oponopono. You know, Ho'oponopono is an ancient Hawaiian practice that was done to bring things pono, to make things right, whether they were within the family, within the community, within yourself. And this clearing is necessary. It's a spiritual clearing. You cannot heal physically until you heal spiritually. And so each one of us can do our own Ho'oponopono. It's a modern way of doing Ho'oponopono. We need to have, you know, this thing righted within us first. You know, peace begins with you. So when you clear your opala within yourself, then you can touch out to others and help to heal the community or your family or whoever it may be or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Ho'oponopono is a divine connection with a kua. Okay? And so a kahuna pule, these people, these masters were brought in to channel the divine mana of Akua, okay? And with that, they healed the spirit of the people.
Well, I think it's hard to come to terms with others and conflict if you have conflict inside your own heart still, yeah?
That's the truth. And one of the leaders of personal Ho'oponopono was a very, very profound woman by the name of Morna Nalamaku Simeona. And she even taught the at universities this method of hers. And it's very simple, and we all can do it. Before we go out and we make noise, do your Ho'oponopono within yourself And it's just four very, very simple things, you know? You say, aloha ke akua, mahalo ke akua, e kalamai ke akua, kamakamaka ke akua, which means, aloha, I love you, akua. I love you, divine source creator. Mahalo, thank you, divine creator. E kalamai, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Forgive me. Okay?
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate you saying that in Hawaiian and then also translating it into English, because a lot of people do not understand Hawaiian. I maybe know a couple hundred words now, but it's really a beautiful language, and it's very poetic, and it has so many layers of deepness. It's really quite an evocative and beautiful language.
Thank you. I don't speak fluent Hawaiian. I probably know just as much as you do, my friend, but my mother, who was Caucasian, pure Caucasian, as a matter of fact, spoke fluent Hawaiian. And my father, who was pure Hawaiian, could barely speak it because they were not allowed to speak it.
Right, and they were punished when they tried to speak Hawaiian.
Exactly. So I'm all for our language being revived, and I'm all for our children speaking and learning, and our malihini that come here who embrace our Hawaiianness and our culture. Mahalo. Thank you. Thank you. We should also be embracing them.
Well, it's fascinating to me, and I love learning in general, but I very much like learning Hawaiian culture, Hawaiian philosophy, Hawaiian worldview, and Hawaiian language, because I don't think it's going to make me turn into a Hawaiian. I'm not trying to be a Hawaiian person, but it makes me, it broadens and expands my vision of what it means to be a human being. So to me, I find that profoundly rewarding. And it's not, to me, it's not a Hawaiian thing. It's a human thing.
Exactly.
I think that we have another caller who's called in. We've been waiting very patiently. And if you're just joining us right now, this is Out of the Box. We're speaking with Auntie Aggie from Anahola. And welcome this other caller onto the line. Aloha, caller. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Hello, Jonathan, and hello, Auntie Aggie. Aggie, this is Raymond, Catania.
Hey,
I used to work with you. How's it? Yeah, we worked with each other for many years, yes, so
yeah.
We know each other very fairly well. Anyway, what I'm calling up for, I don't want to take up too much time, but there's a fight that's happening all over the continental U.S., and it's beginning in Hawaii, and that is the fight against income inequality and the fight for at least $15 an hour.
Oh, like livable wage, not minimum wage.
Yeah, and I have a group of friends that I'm working with, and we're organizing around it. We're working on a resolution that we're going to be putting in the council. You know, we got some council folks to help us at this point. And so what I wanted to tell people was that if they need information or want a flyer that we produced on the Fight for 15, they can call me, Raymond, at 631-6748. And I can send them a PDF, or I can even send them the flyer.
And do you have an email address, caller?
Yes, I do have an email address. My email address is May, M-A-Y, numeral 11, 19, it's N-I-N-E-T-E-E-N, 71, it's numeral 71, at gmail.com. Again, it's May, M-A-Y, numeral 11, spell out 19, N-I-N-E-T-E-E-N, and numeral 71 at gmail.com. That is the anniversary date of the Kalama Valley fight that happened on Oahu over 40 years ago, where 32 of us were trying to stop the evictions of farmers and Hawaiians on Oahu near Hawaii Kai. So anyway, besides that, yes, we're just beginning the fight here, and we're going to be having a traveling demonstration in front of shopping centers where we're going to be informing people about the Fight for 15.
And when is this going to come before the county council?
We don't know yet. We're just beginning to start. We're just beginning to work with some council members on this. So I don't know when it's going to happen. It's like, for example, with the Citizens United thing, Sandy and others worked on it for a while before it got presented at the council. So we have some council members that we're going to be working with on this. And so it's going to take a while before it's presented. But, you know, we're going to try to bring it up. It's not going to be we're the first island in Hawaii that's doing it at this point.
So Kauai leading the way.
Well, we always do, yeah. In a lot of things, when it comes to fighting for our rights and standing up, Kauai is right there in the forefront. We stand side by side with the big island, in fact, yeah?
Yeah, well, I take leadership from no matter where it comes. So thank you. I thank you for the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you for having me on. It was fun to hear Aggie talk, you know, and it's good to hear what she had to say, and especially you had your first guest, Ho'okahi. So that's why I didn't want to talk. I wanted to listen to him first. But I can call up again next week and give more details about the traveling demonstration that we'll be having. It'll be in front of certain main shopping centers on the island. That'll be next week, Saturday, not this one that's coming up. So,
all right, well, keep us posted. Keep
yes,
us posted.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, and then so I'll try to call, try to get on earlier if I can, but, you know, it depends on when you're able to take me on. But I appreciate you giving me this time. And so on Kauai, we're fighting, the Kanaka are fighting for their rights. We're fighting on environmental questions, environmental protection, and dealing with GMOs. And we're also fighting for workers' rights as well. So thank you very much. And I'll go back to listening to your program. You got about 10 minutes left.
All right. Thank you, caller.
Bye-bye.
Raymond, ahuiho, aloha.
Well, you know, income equality or having jobs that pay a decent living wage are terribly important, especially because the cost of living here is so high. You know, if you're not making a decent amount of money, how are you going to pay your KIEC bill? Because electricity here is like 40, 45 cents a kilowatt hour, almost three times what it is on the mainland back in the United States. So these are real issues. How does that strike you, Auntie Aggie?
KKCR?
Oh, she's still there. No, okay, we got another caller coming in.
Got one.
Yeah, put him right on. Aloha, caller.
Right now. I wondered if I could join in the conversation.
You're on the air. Thanks so much for calling in to Out of the Box on KKCR.
Great. Should I just begin speaking or wait?
You're already live on the air, so whatever you'd like to say, please do.
Well, I appreciate what Aggie is saying, and I think I differ in my opinion just a tad.
Sure, what's your perspective?
I don't think this was a situation of the majority of the community not being involved when they knew about it and could have been involved, and so we're kind of Johnny-come-lately. My understanding is that because, first I want to compliment Jim Kelly of KIUC, whom I have found to be totally responsive. And similarly,
yeah, he's absolutely responsive.
Totally. And has gone above and beyond responding to my emails. And Aggie and I attended the recent KIUC board meeting. And similarly, the board was very responsive and willing to listen to different points of view.
Oh, I'm very, very glad to hear that.
Yeah, I cannot say a single bad word about them. excuse me. My understanding is that because the property is on DHHL land, and I totally agree with Aggie about the need for DHHL to be able to generate income in order to provide infrastructure and make properties ready to put Hawaiians back on the land. So I don't have any issue with that. Similarly, I have no problem with a solar project. The issue only is, in my humble opinion, and I'm just one person.
Sure, but that's awesome that you call in and share your view.
It's twofold. First, because it's on DHHL land, Department of Hawaiian Homelands, there was just one segment of the community that was a part of the, quote, community committee. Now, that is an important segment of the community, but it's strictly comprised of people who are Department of Hawaiian Homeland lessees. Now, Aggie, for instance, is a Department of Hawaiian Homeland's farm lot lessee. those people were never invited to be a part of this community.
So the outreach was not broad enough.
So it wasn't even to the entire Hawaiian community. And then, beyond that, we have all ethnicities in Hawaiian, in Anahola, not just Hawaiian. But we also have Hawaiians who aren't even DHHL beneficiaries who have been left out, too.
Mm.
So my understanding is the committee has been meeting since 2011, and they've done work, and this isn't a criticism of them. They are our neighbors, too. The issue is getting communication out. For instance, I only became aware of an email list last year, and then I asked to be included on that email list, and then I started receiving notices of the meetings, and then I printed them, and I posted them at public bulletin boards.
Sure, because not everybody has email. We've got a couple of callers waiting, so if you'd like, try wrap them by and get them in if can do.
Well, so my suggestion to KIUC is they also need to share a responsibility in getting information out to the community. It's not just the committee's responsibility. KIUC has representation on the committee as well.
Yeah, well, and communication is a two-way street, and that's why here at KKCR we really like try to foster these conversations, because when people talk, we get better solutions over and over again.
Right, and I think everybody wants the same goal right now, screening and beautification.
All right, well, thank you for calling
thank
in and sharing
you.
Your views. All right.
Aloha.
Aloha. You got time for just a couple more callers. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Auntie Aggie. I'm back again.
Oh, okay.
So,
they have
a fellow farm lot wife of Alisi has called in, and you know, there are other Hawaiians that live in the village. They live on Aliomanu Road. They live past our Ahupua'a, and you know, none of them happen to know about these meetings as well.
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with getting better at what we're trying to do. I want to thank you so much for calling in. We're kind of getting to the end of this show here, but stay tuned, everybody, because next up is Dove with Evolve. Thanks so much for calling in, Auntie Aggie. Really appreciate it and look forward to future updates. In regard to the solar farm in Anahola, it's a wholly owned subsidiary of KIUC. It's a for-profit company, but it doesn't really make money. It's a mechanism that KIUC can use to create to benefit from tax deferrals and such. So, very clever move by KIUC. The name of that company is KRS1. That's Kauai Renewable Solutions. Number one, I guess, because they also have KRS2, which is a different one. But I thought in honor of that, we would go out with this track here from KRS1.